So we continue in the Sefer of the of Bitachon on the Beis Halevi's Maimra Bitachon on from the Beis Halevi. We are starting Perek Yud Beis and learning today Shviyas Chos Le Ilan Nishmas Chaim Eloza Ben Shemshin Aryeh and Chos for Fuah Shleima for Chaim Moshe Yeshua Ben Malka Chaim Doiv Ben Menorachol Nanaleah Bashein Derachol and a Chos for all those in the Makom Sakana in Eretz Yisrael. So today we're going to touch upon two different concepts. One, we're going to sort of finish off the idea of bitachon. We're going to talk about the benefit that bitachon has in this world and in the next world. And then we're going to, as I said last time, segue into hishtadlus a little bit and talk about proper hishtadlus and ask a basic fundamental question, which is why is hishtadlus even necessary? So let's begin in page 31, Perek Yud Beis. He says like this. He says, "Va'abateach, someone who has bitachon marviach b'shtayim, he gains in two ways. First of all, ba'olam hazeh, in this world, bevada yasik mashachasalai mehitzar chusay, that he's going to obtain whatever it is that he's missing, which needs a little bit of an explanation because it sounds like he's saying that if you have bitachon, anything is possible." Right, he says, whatever it is that you're lacking, you'll have through bitachon. So we are actually going to spend a couple minutes talking about that. Does that mean that whatever it is that you want, you can always get? We'll see. Like the pasuk says in Mishlei, Lo Yarev Hashem Nefesh Tzadik. Hashem will not allow a tzadik to go hungry. Similarly, Yuksiv, the pasuk says, Umishmua ra la yira nach in libi betuach b'Hashem. That I'm never afraid of having bad news. My heart is confident in Hashem. V'harbi psukim kadoim lezeh, many psukim like this. So the furthermore, scharei murba loilam haba. He has a reward that is very great in the next world. The zehu klal gadol b'chol mitzvah, which is a fundamental concept with mitzvahs. That even if you benefit from a mitzvah in this world, the schar mitzvah b'hayam aleka, you cannot get the full reward for a mitzvah in this world. Even if what we say you have peirseyim b'olam hazeh, but as he says, b'chol toivas olam hazeh heim rak pri hamitzvah shaycha b'olam hazeh. Any benefit that you get is just a fruit, but v'hakeren kayam l'olam haba shekulei toiv. But the basic reward, the principle, is always reserved entirely for the next world, because as we said, it's a spiritual reward, and you cannot experience a spiritual reward in a physical body. And if you do, then you're basically getting 10 cents on the dollar. We talked about this a couple of times. So the Beis Halevi is making clear, Schar Mitzvah B'Hayam Aleka, that even if there is benefits in this world, which Bitachon has benefits, but still the Keren is reserved for the next world. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes that the reward for Bitachon is greater than anything you can get in this world. So whatever it is that you're wondering or you're hoping to achieve, the mitzvah of the schar you're going to get for bitachon is what is greater than whatever it is that you actually are davening for, are hoping for. And he says, like, no, it's no different than you get a mitzvah for putting on tefillin, for eating matzah, you get a mitzvah for lighting Ner Shabbos, you get a mitzvah for v'ahavta l'recha kamoicha. So there's no such thing as wasted bitachon, because even if what it is that you were hoping for doesn't come true, but you still are mekayim the mitzvah of bitachon. And the concept of perasayim ba'olam hazeh, karen kayem ba'olam haba, the mashal that they give is it's like a field. When you have a field, when you have a tree that you plant and the tree gives off fruit, when you pick the fruit, so let's say you have an apple tree, you pick the apples, the tree doesn't die. The tree the next year reproduces fruit. It doesn't take away from the essence of the tree picking the fruit. And so that's the concept. You can get fruit from the tree in this world, but the tree itself, the keren of the reward, is reserved for olam haba. So the Reb Moshe Malka compared bitachon to an insurance policy. He says that if a person wakes up and they find that someone hit their car in the middle of the night, so yeah, you get a little aggravated, but ultimately you're not worried because you have insurance for it. Or if your car is missing, stolen, so you know you'll be in a your insurance will take care of it and you'll have a new car. He says having bitachon is the best insurance because you're going to be calm and relaxed, like having an insurance policy, knowing that Hashem is going to take care of it. Now, that doesn't mean that you say, well, I have bitachon, so I don't need to get insurance. You still have to get insurance on the car. But it's the mindset of, I have insurance on the car, therefore I'm not worried. So having bitachon is having insurance, so to speak, on life. Now, I want to go into the appendix here, because I want to deal with this, which is really a fundamental question, which is what he seems to say, that anything is possible if you have the type of bitachon. And that's actually a machloikis. It's machloikis that's been going on for generations, whether that is a true concept in Yiddishkeit. So again, the concept is that Bevada Yasik Mashachasalay Mr. Husay, Hashem is certainly going to give a tzaddik whatever he needs. And Mishmu Ara La Yira, I'm not afraid of bad news. Why? Because Nachain, Liboy, my heart is confident, Betuach Hashem, because I trust in Hashem. Basically, he's saying, because I trust in Hashem, so therefore I'm not worried. And the story was told of Hillel, which we'll get to in a minute. But is this true? Is this concept true that if you just fully rely on Hashem, that there is a level of bitachon that's possible that no matter what you want will come true? So the Stipler says that there are these two different levels. On one level, you have bitachon that you trust that everything that happened comes from Hashem, and therefore you daven that it should work out the way you want. But ultimately, if it doesn't, you understand, you're on a level where you understand that, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though it wasn't the way I wanted, but whatever his plan is, it's the best thing. And that's, as I said, the conventional way of understanding bitachon. And it's also a very intuitive way to understand bitachon, after all. Do I assume that everything I want, I should get? Bitachon doesn't mean that you're guaranteed, right? We would think. Bitachon doesn't mean you're guaranteed to get what you want. Bitachon means that I know that Hashem has the plan and he knows what's best. And so I'm sort of giving him the control. I'm relinquishing control to him and let him figure out what the best thing is for me. But says the Stipler, there is a second approach where a person absolutely relies on Hashem to provide what he needs. And the Alter of Navardai used to teach his Talmidim this concept, that there is this level of bitachon where a person can trust fully on Hashem to the point that there is beyond the shadow of a doubt that Hashem is going to give it to them. And Artin Vada talked about this in his work. He wrote a Sefer Madregas Adam. He has an entire chapter on this topic. Similarly, the Maharal also writes about this concept. And it's based on a Gemara in Ksubis. There's a very humorous story of a Gemara in Ksubis on Daf Samech Zayin Amid Beis. So Rava once went over to a poor person. So in those days, it was very common for people to be supported by the Tamchoi. There was a communal fund. Money was put in the communal in a communal account. And then whoever needed would come to that fund. So you knew who the poor people were because they were the people supported by the Tamchoi. So Rava goes over to one of these guys and he tells the guy, what is it that you like to eat? So the guy says, you know what I like? I like expensive chicken, fat chicken, and I like expensive wine. So Rava says to the guy, I don't understand. You're on public welfare. How is it that you are able to enjoy those things? You can't even afford them. So the person says back to Rava, what do you mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me whatever I need. And he quotes the pasuk, Ein echol eilecha yisaberu, that the eyes of people who hope to you are to you, and you give them food in the proper time. Now, it doesn't say be'itam, which means in their time, which means Hashem just provides things, but be'itai, individually. Every person individually, what he needs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides it for him. So he says, I rely that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to provide me with what I need, and therefore, that's what I rely on. I'll be talking that I'm getting fat chicken and expensive wine. Now, just then, as Rava's talking to the guy, Rava's sister shows up. Rava had not seen her in a number of years. And what do you think she brought as a care package? She brought fat chickens and she brought expensive wine. So Rava hands the chicken and the wine to the guy. He says, here, Hashem gave you exactly what you wanted. Here is your package. And it's a little bit humorous, but the idea is, and this is what the Stipler is saying, is that there is a level of bitachon where a person has ultimate bitachon, and we can, you know, nowadays cannot reach this level, but there is a concept that you have pure, pure and very high level of bitachon to the point where you fully believe without a shadow of a doubt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you, and it will happen. Now, going back to Mishmu Ara La Yira Nachan Levi. So this is a different Gemara. Gemara Brachas on Daf Samach Amud Aleph. Over there, the Gemara says that Hillel was once coming home. He was out of town and he was coming home and he heard cries coming from the neighborhood, meaning someone was crying over a tzara. So he said with confidence, I know that it's not my family, because quoting this pasuk, Mishmu Ara La Yira Nachan Levi B'toch Basha, right? That I know that I'm not afraid of bad things, and therefore, because of that, nothing's going to happen. Now, the question is, hold on a second. You're telling me, Hillel, that nothing bad ever happens to your family? There's a famous concept that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives Yisurin to Tzadikim and their families. So how could Hillel have known that nothing bad happened to his family? So the Vilna Gaon explains beautifully, even if something bad happened to Hillel's family, but Hillel trained them to accept everything from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if someone was crying out in pain, it wouldn't be Hillel's family, not because nothing bad happened, but because they wouldn't react by crying out in pain. That's a beautiful answer by the Vilna Gaon. But then the Vilna Gaon says that perhaps, even as we're saying now on a deeper level, Hillel knew with confidence nothing bad was going to happen. Why? Because he had the level of bitachon that nothing bad would happen. And indeed, because he had that level of bitachon, nothing bad ever happened. This machloikas, as I said, whether this level exists, actually came out in a story. Reb Yisrael Salanter and the Rashash were once sitting in the Beis Medrash of the Vilna Gaon, and they were arguing over this very point. Can a person have this pure, absolute bitachon, and whatever it is that he desires will come to fruition? So Rabbi Yisrael was telling the Rishash, 100%. A person can have bitachon, whatever you want. If you have absolute bitachon, you'll get it. And the reason why it doesn't work for people is because they're not really holding on that level. But if a person is holding on that level, it's possible. And the Rabbi Yisrael said, to prove my point, I'm going to have absolute bitachon right now that I'm getting a gold watch. And suddenly, there was a knock on the door, and a guy came in and brought Rabbi Yisrael a gold watch. That's the story. Now, there's a machloikas if the story is even true, right? So it's a great story. But the question is the story even true? But ultimately, all my point in bringing it out is, you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein would say, Rav Moshe was upset at people who published the story. Rav Moshe said it wasn't true. Rav Dessler says it could be, it was true, but it doesn't apply to Gashmias. It applies to Ruchnias, like, for example, starting a yeshiva. Okay, we'll put it on the side, but the point that I do want to leave you with from this is that I do want us to appreciate that even though we're not holding, there are very high levels of bitachon. And I am going to leave you with one question, which is dealt with in a different appendix, but we're not going to do it today. And that is the question of, if this level of bitachon is true, so then how could Hasara Uruge Malchus happen? You're talking about Rabbi Akiva Vachaveirov. So if those people have pure bitachon, as we're saying, and that's achievable, so then how could anything bad have ever happened to them? They have pure bitachon. So how do the Romans get them and kill them, right? If you have pure bitachon that Hashem is got your back, so then how does something like that happen? That's a very, very deep question. And as I said, it's something we'll get to in a different time. So I want to move on to Perek Gimel, where we start to now switch gears from bitachon to Ishtablus. So Perek Gimel, he says like this. He says, why is there? He's dealing with a fundamental question, which really all of us should have, which is, if you're sitting here for the last 32 pages, 12 prakim, and you're drilling it in my head that bitachon means believing Hashem, and that anything we do is nonsense, and it's worthless, and it's not necessary, so then why do we have a chiyuv hashtadlus to begin with? Why do we have to go through the motions, go through the facade of putting in effort if it's not really doing anything? So he says like this, he says, really, if a person was perfect, then there would be no reason to make any effort. Everything would have been done without any effort. This was how life was for Adam Arishan in Gan Eden before he sinned with Eitz Hadas. And the Gemara tells us, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, Shahayu Malachim Tzaylim Loi Basar, the angels were roasting meat, the Misan and Loyayin and straining wine. So, ladies, you have something to look forward to in Mirtz Hashem. When you are a Zaychet Olam Haba, you'll be able to put your feet up. And you won't have to cook anymore. You won't have to clean. You'll have the malachim doing everything for you. Rak achar kach, but after Adam sinned, nigzara alav, there was a gzera, b'zeh asapecha teichalecha, that a person has to work for his bread. He has to sweat. Shenenash, that there is a punishment, sheyiyah yogeya lehasitzrachav, that a person has to exert himself to get what he needs. So b'zehu begeder oinish. So answer number one is it's a punishment. Adam sinned with the Eitz Hadas, Chava sinned with the Eitz Hadas. Before sinning, they could sit back and relax and take it easy and obviously devote themselves to higher pursuits. But once they sinned, there was a punishment that now you have to work for what you eat. So even though it does nothing, but it's a punishment. Now he gives you a second reason. It's really a deeper reason. He says that after Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, now all of a sudden, we are closer to averus. We have a yetzahara within us, so now we have a stronger desire to do things. It's harder to stay away from doing bad. V'imhaya k'mikadem, and therefore, if we were in a situation, if we had the yetzahara within us, and we had it easy, and we had the malachim doing everything, we'd have a lot of time on our hands. What do you think we would get involved in? We get into trouble. We would start get going places and doing things that would be inappropriate. Like the Mishnah says, that if you're bored, idle, then you will lead to immorality. And therefore, nigzor lav yagia. Therefore, there was this decree that a person has to exert himself. Al derech amram yafet hamatayrim derech eretz. And that's what the Mishnah in Avos means when it says that Torah, learning Torah together with Derech Eretz, together with work, is good. Together, the two of them, you forget about an Aveira. What that means is that by being busy with Torah and a job, so you have your day sort of mapped out for you, you go to davening, you go to work, you come home, you go to a shir, you daven ma'ariv, and then you go home and you spend time with your family. So because of that, you don't have time in your day to sort of get into trouble. And again, this goes back to the idea of the Yetzer Hara used to be an external. So it was easy. The example that he gives on the bottom is, if someone would tell you to go and pull the trigger and kill someone. So we have a total repulsion, right? We would be repulsed by the idea of killing someone. So in order to convince us to do it, there's really nothing that a person can entice us to do that. But so he says, before Adam Kadam Achet was like that, every Aveira was outside. It was like someone would have to convince us, pay us a lot of money to sort of convince us to do the Aveira. And so it was easy to sort of shut that off and walk away from that, from the Yetzirah, from that person, and close your ears and go elsewhere. But it wasn't within you. Now that we have the Yetzirah within us, so a lot of the Aveiras were being pulled from within. It's our own internal desire. It's not so easy to shut off the volume. It's not so easy to turn down the volume and push it away. So because of that, we have this, that's what he's calling this netiya el hara, this proclivity for evil, he teaches it. But basically it means that we are more prone to do averas. So therefore, what does hishtadlus do? Number one, it's a punishment. But number two, it's also keeping us out of trouble. And then he says like this. He says, "O chedisa v'kedushin, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, I'm Reb Shimon Elazar said, Re'isi miyamecha." He's bringing a raya that this is the case. He says, "I'll prove to you from nature that this is really the case. That really Ishtadus is doing nothing." He says, "Because and really we shouldn't have to do it if not for the chet of Adam." He says, "Re'isa miyamecha. Have you ever seen in your life chayav oif, a wild animal or a bird sheyesh lam umnis, that has a job? How do wild animals get their food? It's prepared for them. The lion wants to eat. The deer is running around. The snake wants to eat. So the rabbit's running around. You know, the animals are all brought their food is prepared for them. They don't have to sit there and cook it. They don't have to sit there and go and process and manufacture and wholesale and banking. There's no need for any of that. They mispunished them, shleibitzar. They're sustained without any suffering. Now, he says like this. He says, if the animals were created to serve me, and I was created to serve Hashem, so if they, are, which are serving me, they're not even serving Hashem, if they're serving me and they don't have trouble finding food, then obviously I certainly shouldn't have to suffer for food. Why? So why, Taka, do I have to go out and do ishtadlus? That I corrupted my actions, the kipachti as parnasasi, and I lost my ability to get a parnasa for free. And therefore, ever since that aveira, a person has to be engaged in some sort of activity in order to be able to get parnasa. A person has to do some ishtavas. So I want to just end off here with a different appendix, which is also brings a very interesting idea. And it's the idea of someone had asked me, I think privately, a couple of weeks ago, but someone said to me, how do you know when you're doing too much ishtavas? So it's not a question that I am capable of answering. It's really a personal question. And this appendix talks about that ishtadlus is not a one-size-fits-all. And that's why it becomes such a difficult question for a person to figure out when they're doing too much ishtadlus. I mean, I want to just read you quickly what he says in Olam Hamidos about doing too much ishtadlus. If I can find it, I'm going to put this on the side because I'm not sure I'm going to find it. I may have to just paraphrase it. So I'll see. I forgot to mark it off. But let's go through this appendix first. Okay. So he says like this. So the Beis HaLevi is explaining to us that there is this chiyuv to do a shtadlus. And the question is, how much? So he says it depends on the person in the sense that if you feel comfortable that you go to work from 9 to 5, that's enough for you to get your to make a living, then you don't need to stay at work till 6. But similarly, if you show up at 10, you're being lazy, you're not fulfilling your responsibility. So it depends on what your belief is that a reasonable hishtadlus is. And more than that is unnecessary, and less than that is not fulfilling your responsibility. So he compares it to Reb David Soloveitchik, who was a great grandson of the Beis HaLevi, he compared it to anti-anxiety medication. He says, it's not one dose. It depends how much anxiety you have. The more anxiety you have, the more shtadlus you will need to do. But in the Olam HaMidos, which I'll paraphrase, he says, how can you tell when you're overdoing it? He says, if you do shtadlus, and there's a point where you stop and you say, okay, I did my part, and now I'm going to go about my life and fulfill my other responsibilities, my responsibility to davening, to learning, to my family, to my husband, to my children. It's not going to interfere with my ishtablos. So then that is a proper level of ishtablos. But when you're at the point where you start sacrificing, not effort, now you're sacrificing the other principles in your life, the other important parts of your life, your family time, your time with Hashem, your time davening. You say, I don't have time to daven. I got a meeting. I don't have time for davening. I have to go for a conference. I have to fly out of state for conference. I don't have time to daven. I won't have time for family. So when you start sacrificing the other responsibilities in your life, so now already you know that you are doing excessive ishtadlus. So the Beis HaLevi talks about the misconception that people have that bitachon means not, we don't work for a living. That's what people believe. People believe, ideally, I should be on a level of bitachon where I should just sit back and relax and have the right thoughts, and ultimately Hashem will bring it. And what we learned today is that that's not the case. That even if you have pure bitachon, at the end of the day, and again, we're not capable of reaching the levels of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that we talked about earlier, but we're not able to reach a level where we do no effort. That's not us. That's not people in 2024 are capable of reaching that. And so therefore, you have to put in some effort. The amount of effort, as we said, depends on your level of bitachon. So there's a story with Alter Nevarik. Alter Nevarik, who, as I mentioned before, was a very, very big Baal bitachon. He had no money, and he had to get somewhere by train. So he had a very high level of bitachon. So he says, you know what? I'm going to get on the train. And by the time the conductor comes around for my ticket, I have bitachon, Hashem will provide. So he gets on the train. The train starts to move, and he says to himself, "You know what? If I'm a Baal Bitachon, why do I got to sit in coach? I'll go sit in first class." So he goes up to first class, and he sits down. He says, "When the conductor comes around, I'll have a ticket." He happens to sit himself down right next to a very wealthy Jew. So the Jew looks at him and says, "Rebbe, how are you able to afford such an expensive ticket?" And the Alter says, "It's not. I don't have money. I have Hashem. Hashem will provide." So he's very calm, very peaceful. When the conductor comes around, the Jew feels bad for the Alter. So he graciously offers to pay for the Alter's ticket. Okay, the Alter now is covered for a first-class ticket. So the wealthy Jew says to the Alter, he says, "Okay, Rebbe, now you're getting there, but how are you going to get home? You're not going to be sitting next to me." So Alter said, "I wasn't relying on you. I was relying on Hashem. And guess what? Hashem is making the return trip with me." So that is a exceedingly high level of bitachon. And as we said, a person who might be on that level can rely on Hashem. We are not on that level. And so Reb Chaim, and not only that, but depending on a given day, our level of ishtadlus might actually change from minute to minute. Because there's a story that Reb Shlomo Volbi brought of Reb Chaim V'Lazhar. Reb Chaim V'Lazhar was a Talmid of the Vilna Gaon. Now imagine for a second that we were sitting in the presence of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon, they said, was from a different period. He was from a period of Rishonim. That's how great the Vilna Gaon was. And there were those that pushed back, but he definitely was from a much, much higher dar than the other people in his generation. So when Reb Chaim V'Lazhar was sitting and listening to the Vilna Gaon, he was sick, and they would put leeches for medicinal benefit. Okay, whatever it was, they thought that drawing blood out would be helpful. So during the shiur, Reb Chaim said, because he was sitting in the presence of the Gaon, he didn't need to do that. He took off the leeches. But later that day, someone saw Reb Chaim had the leeches back on. Basically, he was taking the medicine again. So he said to Reb Chaim, "I don't understand. Why are you back on the medication?" He says, "Because when I'm sitting in the presence of the Vilna Gaon, I'm inspired. I reach another level of bitachon. But now that I'm not feel near the Gain, I don't feel it as much, and therefore I feel like I need to do a little bit more, so I put them back on. So you see here this idea that even from one day to the next, a person's level of bitachon can fluctuate. So there's end with this, a cute story of how bitachon or can be abused and putting a stop, you know, to not doing your shtabbos. Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz, who was the mashgiach in the mir, once got a letter from a bachur in a varduk. He noticed on the outside of the envelope that instead of a stamp, the bachur wrote the word bitachon. And instead of a stamp, he wrote bitachon in the corner. So the bachur relied that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make sure that the letter gets to his Rebbe without a stamp. So according to one version of the story, he refused. So he did not respond to the question. According to one version, because he didn't want the boy to become arrogant that his bitachon worked. But according to the other version, Rabbi Yerucham worried that this guy had exceeded his level of bitachon. He wrote the word bitachon, he wasn't really holding there. And therefore, he's going to think, he's going to be convinced that he's on a higher level than he really is. So Rabbi Yerucham wanted the boy to understand, you did not do a proper ishtablis. And so what I want to end off here is with this concept of ishtablis is not a one-size-fits-all. It depends on a person. We have some indicators, as I said, from the Olam HaMidos. We have some indicators here, as we said, from the appendix. And we also have the concept that it's not always, it can fluctuate within a person. It can fluctuate from day to day, from month to month. It's possible that at some times you're going through a situation where you may need to do a little bit more hishtadlus because you're a little bit more anxious. And then at other times you can back off. Obviously, that's why we need guidance from Rabbanim. We need guidance from the Rav in order to be able to tell us when we're overdoing it, when we're not overdoing it. But the key that the Olam HaMidos talks about, I think is very important, is you can always take a self-assessment and say, am I doing hishtadlus when I am putting in effort for something, whether it's a shidduch, whether it's work, whether it's dealing with someone that's sick, how much am I taking away from my normal responsibilities? And we should be able to do a self-assessment and say, is it reasonable the amount of responsibilities that I am ignoring or that I am pushing to the side in order to deal with it? Now, sometimes you have to, Marshall. Sometimes there is a business meeting out of town. And so you have to leave your family, potentially leave a shir for a day. Sometimes, there's a machala and you have to go visit doctors. So it doesn't mean that you never violate your responsibilities, but you have to be able to self-assess and say, okay, I'm going to meet with a shachin. Okay, I'm going to go meet a shachin. Rav Victor Miller has funny stories. We're talking about shachanim. But he says, of course, a person has to put in a shtadlis to go meet with shachanim. But are you going and meeting with shachanim and now you're not davening because you're missing minyan because you're going to meet with a shachin? That doesn't make sense. Rav Victor Miller himself says, you need both. You need to meet with a shachin and you need to daven. And if you're getting involved in shidduchim is taking you away that you can't focus. You can't focus with your family. You can't focus during davening because your mind is just focused on what's going to be with the shidduch, what's going to be with the shachin. Maybe they're calling. I got to leave my phone on. So if it's taking over your life to that point, you're probably stepping over the line in terms of ishtadlus, and it probably needs to be reined in. But as with anything, it's something that needs guidance from someone like the Rav.